And what that means for earnings in July for those GDX holdings I was referencing is that they're going to come in with a good earnings report, right?
Yeah.
And we saw that in January. We saw that in April. Why would it be any different in July? I think you're going to see stellar results because this is going to be the best quarter that those companies can show, right, in years. So I think it's going to be go time for our sector.
John Fenech, how are you doing?
Hey, good, Andy. Nice to see you again.
It's good to see you. So what I really wanted to do is, this is what I have been doing, is just get a first half recap of what we've gone through in the commodities markets, and specifically to you, some of the juniors. And then what you see really going into the end of the year, if we're still in a commodity bull market. We've had this pullback here in the last 30 days. Just give me your thoughts on what's going on.
Well, let's start with gold. I mean, gold has been in an uptrend, broke out, confirmed breakout over all-time high, and has not retraced to that level, which is huge. I know it doesn't feel like that to some gold investors who want 2,500 and 3,000 and these big round numbers, but it doesn't matter to me. What matters is if you're looking at buying gold producers that benefit from a higher sustained gold price, this market is for you. Like, I mean, if you look at what's going to happen in July, we'll have earnings from the big boys as well as any producer. But the big boys include Newmont, NEM, Agnico, AEM, Barrett, GOLD, et cetera. These represent 30% of GDX, just those three stocks, right? So GDX is the barometer that people should be looking at because there's $15 billion in that ETF, right? Like, that is going to continue to do well, in my opinion. I know a lot of people think that this thing is going to retrace back to 25. That's not happening. we've been very confidently saying that because there's so much trauma that investors have had since 2020, right? That they think that, oh, this thing's going to go back to pre-pandemic levels or whatever. It's like, come on. I mean, there's going to be, what we're seeing right now is a belt up in multiple asset classes. And what's going to happen, in our opinion, is that you're going to see a ton of news flow in September and October leading up to the U.S. election, some of which is not going to be pretty. I think it could actually start with the August Jackson Hole Symposium in Wyoming, where, you know, Powell and a bunch of guys are going to get together and talk about the future of rate cuts, right? And that meeting, if you look back at 2016, when we had our last really big rally in the mining sector, in my opinion, outside of 2020, We rallied from January to August. What derailed the mining sector rally then was that meeting. It was Janet Yellen and Fisher getting all, you know, all sorts of negative, and we really had a really rough end of 16 into 17 into 18 until Powell turned the ship in 19. So you always have to respect the Fed, and I think there's a lot riding on that September 18th meeting. And also how Powell, you know, will talk about things going forward. So in our view, a 25 basis point cut, which is getting kind of factored in almost for September 18th now, is not enough to do anything relevant. And so we do think we're going to see a broad market correction sometime between September and November 30th.
I agree with you. And you also have some a potential black swan with the liquidity crisis in the banking sector. That all being said, it's hard for me to see gold itself, the commodity, really go drastically down, if not benefit from this. And in benefit, correct me if I'm wrong, just because the Fed would be wanting to step in to provide liquidity. Is that how you see this?
Well, I've said this on your show before, but just as a reminder to your listeners, in 2020, the Fed cut rates by 100 basis points on Sunday. They'll do whatever they want, whenever they want. It doesn't, right now, what we're seeing the Fed do is just talk this, you know, hey, we want inflation to our 2% objective or 2% objective. It's the same kind of stuff, right? It's like, it's really, it's working because we're in an election year and, you know, Powell is Biden's guy. He's not Trump's guy, and he knows that if he doesn't do certain things, he's going to be out of a job as soon as Trump gets into office, right? I mean, this is
right.
A fact. So I think a lot of this leading up for the election in November is, you have to kind of read the tea leaves here and kind of pick a path, right? If you believe that GDX is going to retrace the 20 sub 20, then don't buy anything here. Don't listen to anything we're saying. Hey, because if that's the case, everything's going to go down with it. We just believe that the mining sector now has made higher load, meaning that gold has not broken through 2075 or 2100. You pick your, breakout point there. It's held 2300 pretty nicely. And what that means for earnings in July for those GDX holdings I was referencing is that they're going to come in with a good earnings report, right?
Yeah.
And we saw that in January. We saw that in April. Why would it be any different in July? I think you're going to see stellar results because this is going to be the best quarter that those companies can show, right? In years. So I think it's going to be go time for our sector. It surely doesn't feel like that because when you look at gold breaking out and things like GDX and the HUI not doing so well, investors get frustrated. It's natural. I just looked at GDX's numbers through June 30, and I think they're up about 9.5%. That's not really wonderful. And the S&P is a double that, right?
Right. Well, let's talk about that. And I do believe that gold will maintain, if you would, its relative strength and where it's at. Tell me a little bit about the miners. What exactly, which ones? And I know that you talk to a lot of these guys all the time. It seems like, what are they saying and what do you really like, or what's on your radar of companies, the juniors that you really like?
Well, last summer, a bit early, July, August, we started to really buy much more on the exploration and development side because the gold price wasn't as high, right? Since we saw the gold break out, we've added more producing companies to our mix. And as we sit here right now, we own about 41% in gold companies or gold exposure in general. I mean, physical and gold companies, whether it's developer, explorer, or producer. We own a lot of different things. We own Agnico, AEM, like we talked about in the mid-tier space. We own, in terms of a stock that trades really well with a penny bid ask on the New York Stock Exchange, we own Dakota Gold, DC, because, Bob Quartermain and the CEO, Jonathan Odd, they own over 15% of the entire float. So when you see that kind of ownership from the two leaders of the company, there's only 99 million shares out. So, I mean, this stock can really move. It's gone from 230 where we entered it all the way up to 324 as we retraced to 235 today as we record this. So we think, when you see opportunities like that, the chart's already showing you the potential, right? It's like, this is not a fake. This is not a thought that this could do this. This just did this a few weeks ago. So why wouldn't you get behind a stock like that, considering they have 2.3 million ounces of gold? They're in a great jurisdiction. They're on private land. I think they expand to 3 million ounces by the end of the year. And then, you start getting more people interested. And in the small cap space, or the micro cap space, we're taking flyers on companies that have really good management that have had success before, like Golden Caribou, GCPFF. Excuse me. We think, Frank has a lot of success in the space for 25 years. This is his third go around. He's got a very similar team that he's built that is very similar to teams that where he sold, his last asset for $330 million Canadian, right? So when you see that kind of a desk on a stock that's trading at 15 cents right now, I mean, it's worth a flyer in a hot gold market, right? People are going to start doing what they did in 2020, Andy. They're going to start Google searching, gold stocks, names with, stocks with names of like gold in it. It's ridiculous what happened in 2020 to me. And it's going to happen again on a much bigger scale, especially if we get any type of disruption like a black swan event or like a banking crisis that you alluded to. These are things that people are going to start saying, oh my gosh, if I need to own some type more gold exposure, why not do it now when it's cheap? It always baffles me that people chase stuff. We're like the opposite of that. We're very happy to sit back on a Dakota Gold and let it come back to us. And now we're buying it again, right? Like with Golden Caribou, we bought some at 15, we bought some at 18, we bought some at 20. They announced the financing. Now it's back to 15. So we didn't see the financing coming. That was our bad. But you have to revisit the thesis of any stock and say, nothing's changed. They just had to raise some cash, right? So like we go back and buy some more 15 today. And we're lowering our cost basis. So, you know, if you look at a chart like that, I think it like 32 or 34 US this year. So it's trading half off. You know, is that realistic? No, not in a hot gold market.
Yeah. It's interesting too. I was talking to an analyst, or I should say, is Adam Hamilton. I don't know if you're familiar with him, but
yeah, I actually followed him for a while in Seeking Alpha.
Yeah, he's great. He's great. Great interview, by the way. Great guy. And he sells a newsletter, and it's funny. He says, and it's ironic. There's a sense of irony there. He said, in a really bad market, when you should be buying, my newsletter sales are way down. But when things really heat up and start going, that's when I'm selling. My newsletter, I paraphrase, but my newsletter sales rocket up. And he's like, I'm scratching my head on that, and I have been for years. So I thought that was an interesting comment of his. And it goes with your thesis, what you just said.
Yep.
Let's talk about some of the other commodities. So you're bullish on gold, I should say. You feel that gold should be holding here, if not increasing significantly going into the end of the year. And again, I don't want to put words in your mouth. I want to paraphrase. Very quite bullish on the stocks here. All of them, just because of the recent good correction that we had, good healthy correction. What are the commodities? Are you talking about a little bit more of the other commodities that you're looking at and are interested in?
Yeah. Well, let's talk about jurisdictions first. I think, like, you know, we've been heavy U.S. and Canada, given what's happened throughout the world. We saw a lot of surprises last year. We saw some surprises this year too, right? In Panama and some places that were not on the do not buy list, but are clearly now. And so we when we take risk in a new jurisdiction, we want to do our homework. We want to talk to people that are living there, not just people that are working there occasionally, right? So two stocks that we've been buying in Peru, which I think is a great jurisdiction for multiple commodity, is SilverX, AGXPF. And Element 79, which is the new name for us, ELMGF. There are different stocks in that SilverX is the current producer of silver. And, you know, I really like Jose's approach. He's not sensational. He basically cut, you know, where he needed to last year. And if you look at their numbers, they're pretty good. The knock on the company is, you know, the AISC, the all-in sustaining cost, has been 20 plus. That's not unusual for silver companies, though. There's very few that you could name, maybe like 10 that come to mind, that have reasonable AISDs. Even stuff like First Majestic has very high cost. You know, the thing about it is, in a hot silver market that I think we're entering, stocks like First Majestic and SilverX are going to fly, because people don't understand the leverage relationship that a producing silver company has to the price of silver going up even a dollar or two and up. So SilverX, I think, is bottom, and we like that stock. We also like Element 79 in Peru, because we see them going back into production in Peru within 18 months. And so when you see a stock like that that's trading completely bombed out, I mean, it's a 10.5 cents right now. We think, you know, on the chart here this year, it was in the 30s, right? So we're not saying it's going to go to $2 or something like some of the people that come on your show, I'm sure, that they 10 bagger this, 20 bagger that. We never say those words. We're just saying, hey, if this goes back to something in the median, if it's trading at 10 and it was at 30, doing the volume at 30, why can't it go to 20? Why can't it go up halfway through that, you know, right? I mean, it's just logical. So as value managers, we're saying, you know, James does a good job of running the show. He, you know, had to do some financings. They sold an asset recently, but they're doing things to survive in what's been a difficult market, so they can, you know, fight another fight down the road. And when you're going back to the production, it's always something that's interesting to me, because as you know, many of these orcos could be 5 years away from production, right? So like, you don't know where the gold price is going to be in 5 years. No one does. But in 18 months, I have a pretty good idea it's going to be higher.
Right. Just for the record, I am also an investor in SilverX, just so everybody knows. And I've made money on SilverX, as well as I have been an investor, and I will be, I'm sure, an investor in shortly in First Majestic, just for full disclosure. Let's talk about some energy here. Energy's probably the biggest commodity, I guess, that's really ripped in the last month relative to everything. A lot of that is geopolitical, as well as getting into the second half of the year tends to be really bullish for energy. And I think there's also a lot of negative sentiment around oil, the price of oil. What are your thoughts on energy, specifically oil? But also, I want to talk a little bit about uranium. What's your thoughts on uranium, specifically that it had such a great run through the first part of the year, if you would, through the first 3 months? What is your outlook on uranium going into the end of the year?
Yeah. So in June, I think we talked on your show a little bit about oil, so I'm not going to do too much on that. I said then what I'll say now, which I think it's going to be a much higher price in a year or two. And so I think, you know, you want to be playing, whether it's through the large caps or the micro caps, you want to be playing oil in some way, shape, or form, or just buy the, you know, the commodity, buy futures, buy the commodity. There's plenty of ETFs out there to track it. We mentioned Anchor Resources on your last show, I believe, which was ANKOF, interface ANK in Canada. It has, you know, some, it's going to be drilling for gold and copper this summer. But what you see on their website is that they've been growing their oil production substantially over the last 5 months. And they just brought in, through a sale of some asset, the non-core asset, $600,000. So, you know, again, small little 8-cent stock that doesn't have analyst coverage, but it's well run with a, you know, reasonable share structure. And something like that in a hot oil market just goes up, right? I mean, it's like you've got the gold and copper as the kicker, in my view. So, you know, that's something that we've been buying. But yeah, switching to uranium, I think there's plenty of opportunity there, because I was at the uranium night that they threw in Vancouver during the V-Ray conference in January, and I got to meet a lot of CEOs there. And remember, that was when spot was over 100, right? And the room was full of euphoria. And I would bet now, if we threw that same party in July, that the room would be pretty dead, because we've gone from 105 spot at that party to about 80. And people are like not expecting this, right? They expected a run collectively to all-time high, and we haven't seen it. That's just part of the thing. I mean, it's like you have to be able to see the positive in what uranium's done over the last 12 to 18 months, which is make a huge breakout. It hasn't really been a wonderful ride for investors that are investing in the stocks. I agree. But like, if you look at Cameco and Denison, some of the bigger stuff, it's done really well. I mean, the stuff that hasn't done well are the explorers and developers, right? And that's what we're buying, because it will be a matter of time before these stocks start doing well. I mean, Peninsula just came out with really good news yesterday, PENMF. They're an Australian company that basically has their main project in Wyoming. So they basically said everything's on budget and on time. And the stock barely moved today. It's unbelievable. You know, it's just, we're at a point where, like, people are willing to bet on stocks that have potential 6, 7, 8 years down the road, but they're not willing to buy a stock that's going into production later this year. Like, I mean, come on. But you have to build a portfolio of names that can help you in the near term, like a Cameco or a Peninsula, and then buy other stuff that are flyers, right? Like that could do well, could have good drill programs. You know, we saw F3 Uranium, FUUFS, come out with really good news last year, made a new discovery, right? And they've raised money into that. Stock hit 41 cents US not long ago, and this year, by the way, and now it's trading at 25. Like, again, something that we will buy down here, and with the idea that at a higher spot price, stock will do better. It's got a lot of news flow. And I think that, you know, investors should take a look at that.
Well, you also said something now, but also previously, about just buying, how you really play all this is you buy the bigger names, or even the ETFs, if you would, and then you buy some of the smaller, the micro caps, the smaller companies, if you would, scaling into them. But they're like, if you would, the satellite that's orbiting the bigger names and the more stable names. That way you get the upside when it does go. But then if it continues to stay up there, you have a chance of hitting some bigger plays. So
yeah, we use ETFs just to be clear, like a lot, because I have an ETF or mutual fund background. And so we use those as core positions, Andy, in portfolio construction.
Very wise. Any final thoughts you have for any listeners or people that are wanting to get in the space or they're currently in this space? What would you want to communicate with them right now until the next time I see you?
I think one of the biggest themes that I see at the conference level, and some of your investors may not be going to places like PDAC or the Energy Transition Conference, but I just went to in DC, is that the U.S. realizes that they're behind the eight ball here with China's dominance in the commodities world, and they're doing something about it. They're starting to see, you know, graphite plays, titanium plays, like start getting DoD contracts that are like the size of their entire market cap, right? We talked about Golden Metal Resources, which has just renamed itself the Guardian just recently, GMPLF. And you interviewed the CEO, Oliver, I guess around about 18, 19 cents. Stock's trading at 32 cents now. I think it has a lot more upside from here because they're going to get some DoD money at some point, in my view. And the reason is they're the only tungsten deposit in the U.S. that is a junior. And by the way, it's in Nevada, which is the best jurisdiction globally, right? It's just a matter of time before the U.S. says we need supply of this critical mineral that's used in body armor, ammunition, et cetera. We can't produce this ourselves. We're not producing it ourselves. How about we fund a company like that so that we can get to a better place down the road, right? Like, this is just intelligent thinking. And I think it's just inevitable. I mean, we're starting to see a lot of DoD money flying around. And I think we're going to see a lot more of that as a theme. So one of my things to investors is to say, you know, buy something like that. Buy, you know, we talked about First Tellurium. Tungsten and tellurium, I didn't know much about 2 years ago, let's be honest, right? Like, these are kind of not household names in the gold and the silver. But that's how you challenge yourself as an investor, is to expand your knowledge into areas where, you know, the average investor and analyst, by the way, has no clue about what's going on in these companies. First Tellurium, you know, just landed a $29 million deal with a company when they had a $6 million market cap that day. They still have about a $7 or $8 million market cap, but in doing the homework, we realized this company Resolve that they didn't deal with has Apple, Tiffany, et cetera, as clients. Like, they are absolutely going to be able to fund their part of that transaction, right? Which I think sometimes investors question, which is normal. You have to question, like, when a deal is done, is this deal ever going to get done if it's a three-year deal, right? Like, it's normal to question these things. But when a company clarifies it for you and says, yeah, by the way, you know, Resolve is a big player and they have huge clients like Apple, it makes you feel a lot better as an investor that a lot of the G&A, if you will, for that division of the company is going to get paid for by someone else.
Excellent. All right, John, I know you're a very in-demand, busy guy, and you got to run, but I just want to thank you for your thought, and we'll love to have you on again here pretty soon.
Sure, yeah. If I can mention just one thing, Andy.
Absolutely.
We've got a conference that I'll be co-leading in October. It's going to be at the Four Seasons in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and it'll be October 20 through 22. I hope investors will check us out there. We're going to have a great lineup of companies. We'll do something a bit different in that we're not going to just have a gold and silver theme. We'll have copper companies, uranium companies, nickel companies, everything, you know, oil and gas, et cetera. So I think, you know, investors that show up will get a lot out of that. And we'll have a full day committed to just one-on-one meeting so that you have the opportunity to meet people in space.
Yeah, please. And send me the link so I can, I will always put that in your show notes and promote that for you. Also, if people want to do business with you, how do they do that?
Yeah, so it's just fennecconsulting.com, and you can click our performance tab and see that, you know, I've been running money for 8.5 years, my own money, my family's money, and our performance is, you know, over various time periods, very, very strong. We haven't posted our June 30 numbers just yet, but we will post those in July, and I think you'll be pleased to see the numbers from the initial look that I have on the portfolio. But yeah, Andy, we do the newsletter as a pure way to try to meet the people like that you have as followers and clients. And then we also do real-time updates via email, which I think is extremely helpful because we're entering a period of time now where that information is going to be much more important, especially September, October, November. If it's not me, you want to align with someone who's communicative, right? You want someone who's going to be on your side and helping you guide you through this period of time where you're just going to be drinking out of a fire hose with news, and you need to understand how that affects the markets.
Yep. All right. As always, John, really appreciate it. Looking forward to seeing you again.
Likewise, Andy. Thanks.
Thanks.